A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's a scenario. You order a $3 phone case from AliExpress. 2.5 weeks later, you get a text. Your package is at the tobacco shop on Dizengoff. You walk in. The guy behind the counter scans a barcode, hands you a padded envelope, and you're out. The question that's been rattling around my head, and I think what Daniel's getting at with this prompt, is who paid for that handoff? The tobacco shop didn't do it out of charity. The courier who dropped off 200 parcels that morning didn't order for free. And yet your credit card was charged $3, period. Where does the money enter this system?
It's a genuinely weird economic puzzle, and it only exists because Israel's postal service basically collapsed. For decades, the Israeli Post has been a national punchline. There are literal comedy sketches about packages disappearing into a black hole. They tried a semi-privatization reform in 2024 that mostly made things worse. And into that vacuum stepped private couriers, Cheetah being the biggest, who built an entirely parallel last-mile network based on pickup points in supermarkets, tobacco shops, convenience stores. It's not premium service. It's not even particularly pleasant, but it's slightly less terrible than the Post, which is apparently all the bar you need to clear.
The bar is subterranean, and they cleared it with a slight hop.
That slight hop now handles over 1 million parcels a month. The economics of how they make that work, on free shipping from AliExpress no less, is stranger than you'd think. We're going to trace the money from a factory in Shenzhen to a tobacco shop cash register in Tel Aviv. Before we trace that money, you have to understand the playing field. Israel is a logistics island. And I mean that almost literally. Look at a map. Your neighbors are Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt. You can't exactly truck a container from Shenzhen through Damascus. There are no overland trade routes connecting Israel to Europe or Asia. Everything arrives by sea or air.
Which is the polite way of saying we're blockaded on three sides, and the fourth is the Mediterranean, which is lovely but does not connect to a Shenzhen warehouse.
So you're a small market, 9.5 million people, geographically cut off, high cost of living, and you've got this enormous appetite for cheap Chinese goods. The demand side is voracious. The supply side is, and for years, the Israeli Postal Company was the only game in town for handling the last mile. They were also catastrophically bad at it.
Catastrophically bad is generous. There was a period where people just assumed packages were gone. You'd get a delivery slip saying they tried to reach you, and you'd been home all day. It became a shared national experience.
The semi-privatization attempt in 2024 was supposed to fix this. It didn't. It left the Post underfunded, stripped of its most profitable segments, and still saddled with universal service obligations it couldn't afford to fulfill. Meanwhile, AliExpress volume kept climbing. Somebody had to deliver all these parcels.
That's the vacuum Cheetah walked into. But here's the part I think most people miss. They didn't try to beat the Post at its own game. They didn't build a better home delivery network. They looked at the problem and said, home delivery is the expensive part. Let's just not do it.
The pickup point model. Instead of a driver navigating Tel Aviv traffic to deliver one package to your fourth floor walk-up, they dropped 200 parcels at 10 locations. A supermarket in Florentin. A tobacco shop on Ibn Gabirol. An AM/PM near the central bus station. You get a text, you walk over, you pick it up. The courier never rings your doorbell because there is no doorbell in this equation.
Israelis, famously impatient and accustomed to disappointment from the postal service, embrace this almost instantly. You mean I don't have to wait at home for a delivery that may never come? I can grab my package when I'm already buying milk?
It's now the default. For most AliExpress orders, home delivery isn't even an option, or if it is, it costs extra and nobody chooses it. The pickup point isn't a premium convenience feature the way parcel lockers are marketed in Europe. It's a cost-saving survival mechanism that accidentally reshaped consumer behavior for an entire country.
That's the landscape. A broken postal monopoly, a hungry market, a Chinese logistics giant flying stuff in by air, and a private courier network that solve last-mile delivery by eliminating the last mile entirely and replacing it with a text message and a short walk. The question Daniel's really asking is how any of this pencils out when the customer paid $3 and shipping was free. Let's follow the money.
The money starts in Shenzhen, not Tel Aviv. When an AliExpress seller lists something with free shipping, they're not actually eating the cost. They're paying Kanyao, Alibaba's logistics arm, a negotiated per-parcel rate. And because Kanyao consolidates millions of parcels, that rate is astonishingly low. We're talking maybe a dollar or two per package to move something from a Chinese factory to Israeli soil.
The seller builds that $1.50 into the price of the phone case. The free shipping is cosmetic. It's already priced in.
And then Kanyao does something clever. They don't ship your phone case individually. They wait until they've filled a cargo container or an air freight pallet with parcels destined for Israel, consolidate everything in a warehouse in Shenzhen or Hong Kong, and fly it to Ben Gurion as a single unit. The per parcel cost of that consolidated air freight is pennies.
Which is why free shipping takes 15 to 25 days. You're not waiting because the plane is slow. You're waiting because Kanyao is waiting for the bin to fill up.
And that's the first layer of cross-subsidization. The people who pay for AliExpress premium shipping, 7 to 10 days, express air freight. Their fees help underwrite the consolidated infrastructure that the free tier rides on. The planes are flying anyway. The warehouse space exists anyway. The free tier fills the empty capacity.
Kanyao gets the parcels to Israel. They don't have drivers in Tel Aviv.
They hand off to Cheetah at a negotiated bulk rate, and this is where the pickup point model makes the economics work. Cheetah isn't paying per address, they're paying per pickup point. One driver, one van, 10 stops, 200 parcels. If you do the math, let's say the driver costs 250 shekels a day, fuel is another 100, van maintenance. You're looking at maybe 2 shekels per parcel in last mile delivery cost.
That's what, 50 cents?
And Cheetah is getting paid by Kanyao at a rate that covers that plus a margin, because they're aggregating volume across multiple platforms, AliExpress, Shine, Wish, whatever else. They're not dependent on any single source. The density is what makes it viable. A driver doing home delivery might manage 40 stops in a day. Same driver doing pickup points does 200. The math isn't complicated.
Cheetah's margin lives in the gap between that 2 shekel delivery cost and whatever Kanyao pays them per parcel. And Kanyao's margin lives in the gap between what they charge the seller and what they pay Cheetah. Everyone's taking a tiny slice of a very cheap thing, but at massive volume.
1 million parcels a month as of this year. That's Cheetah's reported volume. Even if they're making 0.5 shekel per parcel, that's 0.5 million shekels a month in gross profit before overhead. Not bad for a company whose entire value proposition is, we are slightly less terrible than the Post.
The Post set the bar so low that, slightly less terrible, became a viable business model. That's a remarkable indictment of public infrastructure.
We still haven't answered the question about the tobacco shop. Why does the guy behind the counter agree to do this?
I've always wondered about this. He's not in the logistics business. He sells cigarettes and lottery tickets.
He gets paid. 1 to 3 shekels per parcel, typically. So if his shop handles 50 parcels a day, which is modest for a busy urban location, that's somewhere between 50 and 150 shekels a day. Call it 2 or 3,000 shekels a month. For a small business with thin margins, that's real money.
It's rent assistance, essentially.
The commission is almost secondary. The real play is foot traffic. Someone walks in to pick up a package, and while they're waiting for the barcode scan, they grab a pack of gum, a soda, a lighter. The pickup point turns the tobacco shop into a destination. It's the same logic as a gas station convenience store. The fuel brings you in. The snacks make the money.
The tobacco shop isn't doing logistics. They're doing retail, and the parcels are just bait.
Bait that they get paid to stock. It's a beautiful little arrangement. The courier gets density. The store gets paid and sees more customers. The consumer gets their $3 phone case without paying separately for shipping. Kanyao and Cheetah each take their micro margins. Everyone wins as long as the volume holds.
Which brings us to the fragility question. If every link in this chain is surviving on razor-thin margins and enormous volume, what happens when the volume dips or when someone in the chain decides to renegotiate?
That's the question that keeps logistics economists up at night, I imagine. But before we get to the fragility, there's a knock-on effect here that I think is even more interesting. This pickup point model hasn't just solved a delivery problem. It's completely rewired what Israelis expect from e-commerce. Nobody in this country under the age of 40 has ever experienced reliable home delivery for cross-border packages. The expectation simply doesn't exist.
It's almost strange when you travel. You go to the US or Germany and someone rings your doorbell with a package and you think, wait, you came to my house?
That's the point. In most developed markets, home delivery is the baseline and pickup points are sold as a premium convenience. Get your package when you want, not when the driver shows up. In Israel, it's inverted. Home delivery was so broken that pickup points became the baseline, and they're not marketed as convenience. They're marketed as, this is how you actually receive your item.
The pickup point isn't an upgrade from home delivery. It's an upgrade from never receiving your package at all.
And that reframing matters because it means Israeli consumers have lower expectations than consumers in, say, Poland or the UK. They'll tolerate longer wait times at the pickup counter, less polished tracking, and a higher rate of lost parcels, because the reference point isn't Amazon Prime. It's the Israeli Postal Company circa 2022.
Which is a grim reference point. But you mentioned complaints, and there are plenty. Cheetah isn't exactly beloved.
No. And we shouldn't romanticize this. The complaints are real. Lost parcels with no recourse. Tracking numbers that say out for delivery for 5 days. Pickup points where the queue is 12 people deep because the shop owner is also selling cigarettes and lottery tickets and scanning packages one-handed. There's a reason the phrase, slightly less terrible than the post, keeps coming up. It's not praise. It's a description of the lowest viable bar.
The bar is in the basement and they're clearing it by an inch. But an inch is enough when the alternative is a black hole.
Here's where the geopolitical angle makes this fundamentally different from other markets. Poland has InPost, those bright yellow parcel lockers you see everywhere. The UK has Collect Plus. Australia has parcel locker networks. But those systems emerged as convenience add-ons to functioning postal services. They're premium options layered on top of a working baseline.
Whereas Israel's system emerged from rubble.
It's a survival adaptation, and the reason it had to be a survival adaptation goes back to geography. Poland can truck parcels from distribution centers in Germany. The UK is connected to continental Europe by tunnel and ferry. Israel is an island in every way that matters for logistics. No overland routes, distant from European hubs, dependent entirely on air and sea freight. Every parcel that arrives from China flew here or sailed here. There's no cheaper ground option to fall back on.
Which means the cost floor for getting a package to Israeli soil is structurally higher than for a package going to Frankfurt or Manchester. And yet, AliExpress still offers free shipping. That gap between the structural cost and the consumer price is entirely filled by volume and cross-subsidization.
That's the fragility. If Alibaba decides tomorrow to tighten free shipping thresholds, say, minimum order $50 instead of $10, or if Kainiao renegotiates its rates with Cheetah, the entire edifice wobbles. Cheetah's margins are already razor thin. The tobacco shop's commission is already pocket change. There's no fat to cut.
It's a house of cards built on the assumption that Chinese e-commerce platforms will continue subsidizing Israeli last-mile delivery indefinitely, which is not a comfortable assumption.
The 2024 postal reform was supposed to create a competitive alternative. Instead, it left the post even less capable of competing. So now the entire Israeli cross-border e-commerce ecosystem depends on a handful of private couriers whose business model works only as long as AliExpress volume keeps growing and Kainiao keeps paying. That's not resilience. That's a single point of failure wearing a reflective vest.
Let's get practical for a minute. If I'm a listener in Israel, and I'm ordering from AliExpress, which I am, constantly, what should I actually take away from all this? Am I being scammed by free shipping?
You're not being scammed. You're benefiting from one of the most aggressive cross-subsidization schemes in global logistics. The free shipping tier is economically rational to use, but you need to be realistic about what you're signing up for. 15 to 25 days is real. The tracking will go dark for a week while your package sits in a consolidation warehouse in Shenzhen. That's not a glitch. That's the model.
When the tracking finally updates to arrived at pickup point, sometimes it hasn't actually arrived. The barcode got scanned at the depot, and the parcel is still in a van somewhere. That's the slightly less terrible part showing.
So use free shipping, but don't order anything you need urgently. Don't order anything you can't afford to lose. And screenshot everything, the order confirmation, the tracking number, the delivery notification. If a parcel goes missing, your only leverage is documentation.
Which brings us to the consumer protection question. What rights does someone actually have when a cheetah parcel vanishes?
This is where the regulatory vacuum bites. The Israeli Postal Company, for all its flaws, has a formal complaints process and some legal obligations. Private couriers operate in a much grayer space. Technically, your purchase contract is with the AliExpress seller, not with Cheetah. So if the parcel disappears after Kainyao hands it off, you're in a blame triangle. The seller blames the courier blames the seller, and you're refreshing a tracking page.
The practical advice is, dispute it through AliExpress's platform immediately. Their buyer protection is surprisingly decent, precisely because they know the last mile is chaotic in markets like Israel. Don't wait. Don't negotiate with the courier directly. File the dispute.
That's the actionable takeaway. Free shipping is a good deal. This system works often enough to be worth using, but treat it like a probabilistic bet, not a guaranteed service. For anything expensive or time-sensitive, pay for the premium tier, the 7 to 10 day express option. That extra few dollars buys you a completely different logistics chain with better tracking and actual accountability.
Now flip this around. You're an entrepreneur in, say, Guatemala City or Jakarta, somewhere with weak postal infrastructure and a growing appetite for cross-border e-commerce. Is the Israeli pickup point model something you could replicate?
The short answer is yes, and the key variable is volume aggregation. You can't build this for one platform. Cheetah works because they handle AliExpress, Shine, Wish, and whoever else, all flowing through the same van to the same tobacco shop. That's what creates the density that makes 2 shekel delivery costs possible.
The playbook is, sign up multiple e-commerce platforms as clients, negotiate bulk handoff rates with a logistics consolidator like Kainyao, and recruit a network of small retail stores as pickup points. The stores don't need much. A barcode scanner, some shelf space, and a willingness to handle foot traffic.
The pitch to the store owner is exactly what we described. We'll pay you a small commission per parcel, and we'll bring customers through your door. In markets where retail margins are thin and foot traffic is valuable, that pitch works. We're already seeing versions of this emerge in parts of Latin America and Southeast Asia.
The cautionary note is the fragility we talked about. If you build a business that depends on AliExpress's free shipping policies, you're building on someone else's foundation. The moment Kainyao adjusts its rates or tightens its thresholds, your margins evaporate.
Which loops back to the policy failure. Israel tried to fix its postal service through semi-privatization in 2024, and it didn't work because they never addressed the actual last-mile problem. They reshuffled ownership structures while private couriers solved delivery from the ground up. The result is a system that functions but has no safety net, no ombudsman for lost parcels, no service guarantees, no regulatory backstop.
The system works until it doesn't, and when it doesn't, you're on your own.
That's the trade-off. Private couriers filled a vacuum the state couldn't fill, and they did it with genuine ingenuity, but nobody's watching them. If you're a consumer, your best protection is knowing how the money flows, so you understand who actually owes you what and where to apply pressure when something goes wrong.
If you're a policymaker, the lesson is you can't fix last-mile delivery by reorganizing the org chart. You have to solve the actual logistics. Israel's private couriers proved it's solvable. They also proved that leaving it entirely to the market means leaving consumers with no safety net. Somewhere between the post office's incompetence and Cheetah's accountability vacuum, there's a better model. Nobody's built it yet. Here's the open question that sits underneath all of this. Amazon entered Israel more aggressively in 2025, and local e-commerce platforms are getting more sophisticated. If AliExpress suddenly has real competition for the bargain hunter consumer, does the free shipping model survive, or does the whole subsidy logic start to unravel?
I think the model survives, but it gets squeezed. AliExpress can't afford to lose the Israeli market. It's small, but it's voracious, and it's been loyal. But if Amazon starts offering faster delivery with actual customer service, AliExpress might have to shorten those 15 to 25 day windows. and shorter windows mean less consolidation time, which means higher per parcel costs.
Which means either prices go up, or the free shipping threshold rises, or the cross-subsidization gets more aggressive. None of those are great for the consumer.
The wild card is whether Amazon tries to build its own pickup point network, or just eats the cost of home delivery. My bet is they'll do a hybrid, use pickup points for the cheap tier, home delivery for Prime. But that means they'd be competing directly with Cheetah for shelf space in those tobacco shops.
The tobacco shop owner suddenly has leverage. Two couriers want his counter space. Maybe the commission goes from 2 shekels to 3. Maybe he gets picky about which parcels he accepts.
That's actually a healthy development. Competition at the pickup point level could force both couriers to improve. Better tracking, faster scanning, shorter queues. The current model works because Cheetah has no real rival in the pickup point space. If Amazon or a local player builds a competing network, the slightly less terrible bar might actually rise.
Which brings me to the final thing I want to land. We've spent this episode tracing money through a bizarre logistics chain, Shenzhen to Ben Gurion to a tobacco shop on Ibn Gabirol. And the thing that sticks with me isn't the economics, it's the image. Somewhere in Tel Aviv right now, there's a guy behind a counter surrounded by cigarettes and lottery tickets, and stacked behind him are 50 padded envelopes from China. Each one contains something someone ordered for $3. A phone case, a kitchen gadget. And that guy, that shop, is a node in one of the largest logistics networks ever built. He doesn't think about it that way. He's just scanning barcodes and selling gum. But the system routed a package across the world, through consolidation warehouses, and air freight pallets, and customs clearance, and courier vans, and the final handoff happens between a barcode scanner and a customer who walked 3 blocks.
The tobacco shop as the last node in the global supply chain. It's almost absurd, but it's also kind of remarkable.
It's what happens when public infrastructure fails, and the market cobbles together a replacement from whatever materials are available. The result isn't elegant. It's not reliable in the way we'd want. But it functions. 1 million parcels a month, handed off in shops that sell cigarettes, because the postal service couldn't do its job, and the geography made every alternative expensive.
Nobody designed this. That's the part that gets me. This wasn't a government plan or a corporate strategy document. It was a vacuum and a bunch of actors. Chinese platforms, logistics consolidators, Israeli couriers, small retailers. Each solved their own piece of the puzzle, and the pieces happened to fit.
The question is whether they keep fitting when the ground shifts. Competition from Amazon, policy changes in China, a renegotiated Kanyao contract, any of those could crack the edifice. And if it cracks, there's no postal service left to catch the fall.
Enjoy your $3 phone case. It traveled further and through more hands than you'll ever know. And the fact that it arrived at all is a small logistical miracle, funded by cross-subsidies and held together by razor-thin margins and a tobacco shop owner who figured out that parcels bring customers.
That's the image I'll leave with. Next time you pick up an AliExpress package, look at the person behind the counter. They're not just selling you cigarettes. They're the final handoff in a supply chain that spans half the planet, and they probably don't even think about it. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
For decades, musicologists credited the Icelandic composer John Leifs with inventing the stinkling, a percussion instrument made from struck volcanic rocks, in 1935. In 2018, researchers discovered a 1927 letter from a Reykjavik schoolteacher describing an identical instrument used in a children's rhythm ensemble, predating Leifs's claimed invention by 8 years. The teacher had simply never published the description.
A children's rhythm ensemble beating Leifs to the volcanic rock instrument by 8 years. That's going to bother some musicologist somewhere.
The schoolteacher who never published. There's a lesson in there.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who's ever waited for an AliExpress package, which is basically everyone in Israel. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Check your tracking number.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to us.
show my weird prompts where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.